Welcome back to Modern Politics. I'm Warren Balog.
And I'm Emily Yukis.
It's the third week of March, 2025, and there's a lot happening right now, a lot of terrible things in the news, particularly the resumption of Israel's war in Gaza. Israel basically broke the ceasefire or changed the terms of the ceasefire, and when the Palestinians didn't agree to it, attacked again. And of course, Trump is now attacking Yemen. And the reason is because Ansar Allah, the Houthis, resumed their blockades just of Israel. So we have the situation where the U.S. is being dragged into a Middle East war. I mean, it's everything we've been saying, Emily.
Yeah.
It would happen with Trump.
It's not too hard to, you know, it wasn't too hard to predict all this.
We could get into all this. There was, though, something that popped up on my radar, as it were, that I felt deserved a response. We don't like to comment on everything that YouTubers, you know, random YouTubers will say on this show, but once in a while, I think it's useful to get into it when someone makes an argument that should be taken seriously and responded to.
Yes, absolutely.
In this case, it was someone that I have followed for a number of years now, who I have a ton of respect for, which is Kim Iverson, who she was on the show Rising for many years and published by The Hill. And just like Crystal Ball and Sagar and Jetty and Ryan Grimm and many others,
she was canceled off Rising.
Kim has been very critical of Israel and America's role in the Middle East.
Yeah, she's doing a great job.
And she's done tons of great videos on this, but she also, she's an interesting commentator because she takes a fairly non-ideological look at issues. It's usually a pretty common sense perspective. She doesn't really tack hard to the far left or, you know, like the MAGA right on issues. So I follow her. I watch her videos. I respect what she has to say on a lot of issues. But she got into it with someone else who I've been following for many, many years, who I respect a ton, and who you recently went on her show, which is Rebecca Hargraves, a.k.a. Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. And they got into it apparently on Twitter back in February.
And then I got into it.
Yeah, you got into it too. And
I ratioed Kim Iverson about four or five times.
Yes, yes.
And Kim, if you're watching this, I'm Linda. I'm the Wojak that ratioed you. I got into it with that with her.
Well, she was in the wrong. She was in the wrong, and she ended up deleting the whole exchange. Mm-hmm. But the reason I wanted to respond to it now is because she just did a whole video segment on her show, the Kim Iverson Show, where the title of the video is White Nationalism, the New Trans Movement.
That's a really bad title.
Then she subtitles it The Right's Overreaction to Critical Race Theory.
Okay.
So the real political point here, and we're going to go through some clips of this video, is that white nationalism or, you know, white positivity is the term the one person in the video uses, is taking the backlash against critical race theory and taking it too far. Like, in other words, the pendulum is swinging now too far in the other direction.
Yeah, so this is like, you know, they're doing the woke right thing.
And it's worth noting that Kim Iverson is someone who generally has pushed back on all this insanity from the left, like critical race theory. And her position, like a lot of people, common sense people, is that CRT and a lot of the, you know, the trans stuff and all the crazy stuff out of the far left that we've seen in the last, you know, especially the last like 4 years, but really since 2016, that it's madness, that it's insane, and that it does target white people unfairly and says that white people are guilty for just being born white and they need to atone for their crimes. So in fairness to Kim Iverson and many people like her, she has pushed against all the woke stuff. And that's really the reason why I want to address this, because she's raising points in this video that I think a lot of people would come to these points or a lot of people would agree with these points. And so it's not simply this one YouTuber who has an account and is making an argument. It's that these are arguments that are fairly widespread and come sort of intuitively, I think, to people who haven't really thought a lot about these issues.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, I want to play you guys just one clip, very quick clip, because the same day that Kim released this video about white nationalism, she also released this video about Israeli control over U.S. foreign policy. And here's a sample of what she had to say.
Every shot fired by the Houthis will be looked upon from this point forward as being a shot fired from the weapons and leadership of Iran. And Iran will be held responsible and suffer the consequences. And those consequences will be dire, says Donald Trump, president of the United States of America. Are we going to war with Iran on behalf of Israel? Because how does it benefit the United States for us to go to war with Iran? What is in it for you or me if we go to war with Iran? Would you even notice, besides the fact that our kids are being sent off to die in Iran for Israel? Does that make sense to anybody here? Is this America first? Is this what Donald Trump was elected on? Because I'm pretty sure it was to end wars, not to escalate them. But this is the last war in the great wars that Israel's trying to fight. They started off with, they wanted a war with Iraq. They got one. They wanted a war with Syria. They just toppled it. They wanted Lebanon. They've destabilized it. Libya, look what happened to Gaddafi, and now there's a slave market in Libya. And now they want us to go and take out Iran. That is the final one, and that's the one they want the most. And they've got their puppet now, Donald Trump, completely in office. He's doing everything that they want, and it looks like he's also marching us to war with Iran. This doesn't even benefit the United States, yet we did it because Israel wanted us to do it on their behalf. Rather than them just defending themselves, they got their big bad bully brother to do it. And we're claiming it's a matter of national security, but we're putting American lives at risk because now the Houthis are targeting American ships. So if you've got family members in the Navy and they're maybe deployed out to the Middle East, they're now at risk because Israel decided to starve a bunch of kids in Palestine. How is this an America First agenda? How is this an America First agenda? How is going to war with Iran an America First agenda? How is any of this? Is everybody just fully aware that we're completely bought off at this point? I mean, we are an Israel first nation. We're doing everything at their behest. Our foreign policy is completely controlled by them. That is so obvious. Trump is doing some of the token things here in the United States in order to keep Americans quelled, so that it's not obvious that really we're spending all of our money and might on Israel and at the behest of Israel. So we'll do some little token things like jail a protester. That's one guy. We're going to jail one protester because that makes you feel like, oh, something's happening. Or we're going to take a plane load of 100 Venezuelan gang members and send them off to El Salvador. And then you feel like, wow, something's actually changing for the better. Meanwhile, we're going to go to war with Iran. And because that's the thing that Israel wants the most. That's what the Israeli people want the most.
Now, that's all good stuff right there.
It's excellent.
I have to say, a couple months ago, Kim actually retweeted one of my tweets about Gaza.
Yeah.
I don't think she knew who I was or anything, but she retweeted something of me.
Yeah, so, she doesn't usually do the whole like lefty thing of oh, Israel is a white supremacist colonial state. She never does that. She just says right out that Israel controls U.S. foreign policy, and
she also goes she goes beyond too. She also calls them Jews. She says Jews are doing it. She doesn't fall into this, it's just Israel. Leave the Jews out of it. I mean, she's aware that it's Jews, and she will say so.
Well, because her background, she went to the West Bank for a while, and she did a series of videos where she talked about what life was like in the West Bank. And she used to have all these Jewish friends, apparently, in media and, mm-hmm. and journalism.
Yeah.
Who, when she came back from the West Bank, she's trying to tell them, like, this is how it is in
and
the West
Bank. And they defend it. And she actually made a recent tweet that was like, I'm done doing the not all Jews thing. Every single Jew I talk to basically defends this genocide. And there's not a single Jew that I talk to that doesn't say that this is a good thing. And Israel has the right to defend itself by murdering a bunch of kids and stuff. So she's going freaking hard on the Jews. So
and
we'll
she's
give
not
her credit there. She's not doing it from a classical leftist perspective.
Yeah, like this is like an anti-white leftist perspective.
Right,
it's very
right.
important for any of our audience that are not familiar with Kim Iverson. It's very important you understand that. She is taking almost like Pat Buchanan line on the state of Israel, or it's right in line with Paul Findlay, They Dare to Speak Out. I mean, this has become more mainstream with these sort of independent populist kind of media. I would describe Kim as sort of a populist. This whole ecosphere of media content creators who are independent, this line on Israel has just become normal. And it's great to see, because this is stuff that even 5 years ago, I think, would have been confined to like the very hard anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, white nationalist right, a lot of these points.
Right.
So that's great to see. And that's why it's worth responding to this, partially because someone can have really smart views about Israel and Jewish power and can see what's happening and then make this dumb. Yeah. Well, let's get into it. What was the original? I'm not on Twitter anymore, Emily. So what was the original exchange here?
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. It is disappointing. You know, we like to think that we have allies against Judaism on the left of different races. But this anti-white stuff does inevitably come out when you prod him on it. So, you know, as good as Kim was on that subject, she is not so good on this subject. And she got very triggered by one of Blonde in the Belly of the Beast's tweets that went viral recently. Simply saying she likes living in a safe white town. Let's read that. So Blonde says, "In my 90% white town, I can walk around wearing all of my jewelry, a cashmere coat and a nice handbag with a wallet full of cash. I can leave my doors unlocked. I can leave my laptop in my car overnight and no one steals it. I accidentally left a scooter at the park, went back 3 days later, and it was right where I left it. This is what your life could be like without diversity." So, you know, where's the lie there?
Well, and this went viral, correct?
Yeah, that got 50,000 likes. So that went viral.
6 million views about?
Yeah, 6 million views. Well, Kim claims in this video that Rebecca attacked her and went after her. When in reality, Kim went after Rebecca. Rebecca had no idea who Kim was at the time. I actually had to explain it to her in the comments.
Yeah.
She's good on Israel, but not so much this. But Kim did go after Rebecca first and resorted to a lot of sort of leftist name calling, some stuff you would, you know, expect to hear from Antifa even. So Kim deleted most of these tweets, and she admits to deleting most of these tweets because she said that she didn't want to engage the online right.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's a little cowardly. She did get engaged with, though, a lot by me before they could be deleted. So let's go through a few of these tweets. She responded and said, "Keep making Northern Idaho look bad with these racist tweets. Maybe you should disclose that you're part of the neo-Nazi clan." So, I mean, you know, Blonde is a white nationalist, that's for sure. But the tweet wasn't even saying, like, you know, we got to kick all the non-whites out or anything like that. It was saying, I like living in a safe white town. I like living in Idaho because it's, you know, largely white. But I mean, where's the lie here, Kim? "Being against whites only ideology isn't stemming from anything other than me not being a racist bigot." So yeah, she's being quite rude to Blonde. You know, she's calling her names, she's calling her a bigot, Nazi, blah blah blah. I mean, so it's not really a surprise that everyone like came after her.
Well, people dogpiled her and because when people see that kind of argument, when you make that type of argument, you are repeating essentially like an Antifa line. And that's something that, you know, maybe Kim Iverson can understand this or maybe she can't, but that's really the first mistake. When you come at people like that, when you come at Rebecca, who makes great videos, very good content, very intelligent, I mean, she's the opposite of someone that goes out there and does the sort of shock
vitriol,
slurs. And,
yeah. Like, come on. Like, I'm someone that does more of, like, the shock content. She's very, you know, bubbly and sweet. Kim, you know, you insulted her. You insulted her. You went after her first. So I
name
got...
Name calling.
And I mean, that doesn't help. That's not going to help.
Yeah,
so
you're name calling someone. You're racist. You're a Nazi. You're a bigot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just childish name calling. And when you do that, You're gonna piss people off, and they're gonna start name calling you. And
right.
That's the first problem with Kim's video, is that she kind of makes it sound like she was the one that just suddenly out of the blue got attacked.
Yeah.
She waded into this by lobbing these attacks at Rebecca first.
Right. And, you know, Kim's, I think, is better than that because she does a lot of intelligent content. So right. I got in on this conversation early, and to another one, I said, imagine going to any Asian country and calling them racist bigots for wanting their country to remain majority Asian, or shaming them for not wanting to be replaced by other racial groups. Why is your vitriol specifically reserved for white people?
Some of the arguments that were being made against her, I thought were just kind of grug and embarrassing. Like the whole thing of like, there were people saying like, go back to China or something.
Yeah,
and Kim Iverson, of course, is half white, half Vietnamese. And also, she's not an immigrant. Her mother was. Her mother was a refugee from the Vietnam War, but she was born here in Idaho, and that's her point. And this touches on a larger problem with people who are, one, of mixed background in America, also people who have immigrant parents from other parts of the world but were born here. And I want to address that and give that its due, because those are real arguments that I don't think we engage with enough in the pro-white community.
Yeah.
But with all of that said, the reason she got this strong response was because of the way she went at Rebecca.
Yeah, I think she also told her to get the fuck out of Idaho, which yeah. I don't have that screen cap, but I'm pretty sure she did say that.
Right. Now, her YouTube video that she made was much more reasonable. So clearly she got triggered on her Twitter and had an emotional outburst there and then got it back,
yeah.
You know, and that's what happens on Twitter.
Yeah.
But let's listen to some of this video, because the video is much more intelligent and much more interesting. And this is where she's kind of building her case that genuine white nationalism is actually an overreaction to critical race theory. By the right, and that the pendulum is then swinging too far, and that it's actually dangerous in her mind because she thinks the same way the comparison to the trans ideology is how something that was a fringe view on the left ended up completely taking over the leftist conversation within
right.
a few years.
Yeah.
So she says she views white nationalism as something that was sort of a fringe idea on the right that is now gaining all kinds of ground and could end up completely taking over the right in a few years.
All right. So I wasn't sure if I even wanted to talk about this, because part of me did not want to give any more credibility to what I think is a very toxic thing that is happening online and on the right. And that is what I would consider actual racism. Now, before you jump down my throat, I realize that the left has categorized everything as racist. They'll just quickly say, this is racist, that's racist, this is racist. And we've been hearing this now, especially since 2016, just racism this, racism that, racism this. But I recently was attacked by a clan, for lack of a better term, a clan of white, I don't know if I would call them white supremacists. I don't think they're supremacists, because I think we have to be very careful with the actual terminology. I don't think they think they're better than anybody because of their race. Maybe they do, but I didn't see evidence of that. But I would say that they are white nationalists for sure, meaning they believe the United States should be a white nation, predominantly white. And what had happened was, I'm followed by quite a few people who are also critical of Israel, the way that I've been very critical of Israel. And also, there's also a group of people that were very critical of the COVID mandates and the COVID, you know, like what we went through during COVID. And a lot of these people moved to red states, one of them being my home state of Idaho. I was born and raised and still keep a residence in Idaho. Okay, so I'm an Idahoan through and through. And a lot of these people moved to Idaho from more liberal states because they liked the freedom that Idaho presented. They're new Idahoans. They've been there for only, you know, since not even, like 2020. Well, I got attacked by this group, and they came out in full force. And this isn't totally fringe. I mean, these accounts on X, for example, and on YouTube have thousands and thousands of followers. These are not just people that have a couple hundred like bots, or they have five people and they're just saying stupid stuff on the internet. I mean, these are people that have big shows that have a lot of views and followers. They've got a lot of followers on X, and they're pushing a white-only society to the point where they told me, somebody who was born and raised in Idaho, but I'm half Vietnamese, that I don't belong in my own state that they just moved to like yesterday. I ended up blocking the person I originally, which I don't do that much on X. I don't block people. But I did this time. I decided to block the person, and I decided to delete all of my interactions with her because I realized this is getting dangerous. And I'll tell you why I think it's dangerous. Because this group reminds me very much of, I would say, on the left, the trans ideology group that at one point it was to me so fringe it wasn't a real threat. Like, why even pay attention to this? Yes, there's this fringe group out there. I mean, of course, the left is all about LGBT, and then it kind of got ridiculous when they started doing like this, SL2LGBTKIZX. I mean, it started getting really ridiculous. But to me, it was fringe at the time. And I thought, there's no way this is actually going to take over the left. This is not a real thing. But slowly through time, it did. And slowly through time, we actually saw the left become inundated, and the mainstream left became insane with this highly fringe ideology. And then it started becoming really mainstream. And that to me is kind of the trans movement in particular, and this push to transition little kids and, you know, all of that, and guys competing in women's sports and whatnot. That all seemed fringe, small, like it wasn't a real threat until it just was. And so this group, my fear is I'm seeing this group, and this is kind of what I'd been talking about over these last couple of weeks, that I'd been seeing a overcorrection the right is having an overcorrection to the left's craziness that is turning the right also crazy. And if they don't get a hold of it, it's gonna take over, and it's gonna be just as nutty as the left has been over these last few years. There is a distinct difference between those of us who are against the left's crazy critical race theory and how they were pushing that and making white children feel, you know, they go to school and they're being told that their whiteness was somehow that they owed everybody because they were just born white. I mean, it's just insane stuff. There is a difference between critical race theory, which is looking to replace critical race theory with a meritocracy, which is what we all want. And then there's those who are against critical race theory, but they have a different aim. And that is not to replace it with a meritocracy, a colorblind meritocracy. They want to replace it with white positivity. And if we don't realize that these are two separate camps, then the first can easily become overrun by the second camp.
The fact that Kim posted this video on YouTube, but I cannot find her advertising this video on her Twitter is very interesting.
She knows what'll happen on Twitter.
Well, under the YouTube, there is a note put by YouTube, white genocide conspiracy theory, tacked on the video. The white genocide, white extinction, or white replacement conspiracy theory is a white nationalist conspiracy theory that claims there is a deliberate plot to cause the extinction of white people through forced assimilation, mass immigration, or violence, genocide, and links it to it. And you cannot watch this video on YouTube without a little thing playing. If you watch it on your TV, there's a little thing up in the corner that links to that. Now, the fact is, YouTube is censored out the wazoo. That's the reason we're not on YouTube, because our show would get taken down immediately. Mm-hmm. YouTube is not a free speech zone. YouTube's censorship regime was put in place by the late Susan Wojcicki, who was a radical Jewish supremacist, mm-hmm. who along with Jonathan Greenblatt and the ADL, imposed this insane censorship regime on YouTube, largely after Charlottesville, the Unite the Right rally, which Kim included in her thumbnail, the Torch March.
Yeah, and I'm an animator. In case you don't know, Kim, I'm a well-known animator on the internet. I did a lot of non-political content for years, and my YouTube channel got taken down in early, 2018. So
And Twitter is still censored. I got censored off of Twitter, but the reality is Twitter is a little – there's a little more free speech on Twitter than there used to be under Elon, and you're able to stay on there and
– On a sock account.
On a sock account, yeah. And so the reason Kim, I think, didn't post this to her Twitter account is because there's too much free speech there, and all these people would comment on it, and – YouTube, because of this Jewish censorship, is more of a safe space for her to post this. So that's interesting in and of itself. I mean, that lends credence to the idea that there is a very deliberate anti-white policy here in place, that you
doesn't
cannot allow free discussion.
Yeah, and I think Kim is probably intelligent enough to be aware that the white demographic is going down rapidly and will continue to go down. So,
So
it's not a conspiracy theory.
So let's talk about Idaho. You know, with all due respect to non-white immigrants or mixed race immigrants or people who were born here that are the children of immigrants. Yes, this is something that I think not enough people on our side acknowledge this or know this or think about it, because it's something we have to take into account when we talk about these politics. Is that there are tons of people, especially now with 50 million people from most almost entirely non-white parts of the world, have come to the United States. 50 million illegals are probably here. It's probably more than that. It's a lot. It's definitely
it's
more than that.
It's bad.
With legal immigrants. But people come here and they have kids here. And when you were born in the United States, it doesn't matter if your family came from Vietnam or wherever else. When you are born here, and this is all you know, is the United States of America, to say go back to wherever. Kim later says she has never been to Vietnam. She has never set foot in Vietnam.
Yeah.
So like it or not, she is an American. I mean, she identifies as an American. America is her home that she knows. And this is a reality that we have to deal with. And particularly, I think, when people bury members of their family here. I've heard this before from immigrants, and it makes perfect sense. And I'm sure my immigrant ancestors went through the same thing. Once you bury relatives in American soil, you really feel rooted to this land. So that's understandable. That is understandable.
Yes.
However... In another video from 3 years ago on Rising, she talks about how her family came to America. And we don't need to play the whole story, but it's a very moving story about how her grandmother was involved with a U.S. serviceman in Vietnam. And I guess they were with the South Vietnamese, and her family, her mother and her sisters ended up coming here after the fall of Saigon. So they fled Vietnam and they settled in Idaho.
Yeah.
I just want to play 1 minute of this where she's talking about the welcome that her family got when her mother came to Idaho.
From the Clark Air Base in the Philippines, my family went to Guam for processing, where they stayed a few weeks, sleeping in tents before finally being resettled in the United States. My mom tells me she was amazed by how nice and clean everything looked when she arrived here in America. They were settled in Boise, Idaho, because my aunt, the one who married a serviceman, had been living there where he was from for the previous 2 years. She tells me how neighbors came to give them home-cooked dishes of food and welcome them to the area. She says everyone looked the same to her, and English sounded like a bunch of S's strung together. Neighbor kids would invite my cousin outside to play, even though they couldn't understand her. She would play sports with them and eventually became a soccer star. High school was tough. My mom didn't know the language. She knew math, having already learned calculus by the time she was 12. She envied the other girls' light hair and their big, beautiful eyes.
So the point here is, she is, without saying it, she's basically saying the same thing Rebecca is saying. She's just not saying the word white.
Right, right. But we know they're white. She knows they're white. How many years ago did her family get here?
Well, that was the fall of Saigon was 1975.
Okay, so that was Idaho was literally probably like 97% white. It's still very white. It's still one of the whitest states.
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, you got welcomed with open arms and kindness by white Americans,
nice, friendly white
Americans.
People, right? White people, because they had a almost all white state, a white community, white towns, white civilization, and you grew up among all these white people, and you're half white, so half of your family was white.
And you're married to a white guy.
Well, yeah, well, now that's true today, but it's, you know, that's another thing. When someone is of mixed background, we always have to keep that in mind, that half their family, when they look at their dad or their mom, in her case, I think it's her dad, she sees a white man when she looks at her dad. So, yeah. So she is half white.
She's half white. And she's just as white as she is Vietnamese.
Right. It's too easy to just say, go back to Vietnam, because this is a little more complex than that. And you could say, well, Warren, you know, it doesn't matter. We need a white only country, or we need to protect. And I agree. We need to defend our people and our land and all that. And these sort of cases on the margins, you can't let that interfere with the larger goal here, or the larger problems that we face as a people. But with that said, I think especially now, with the amount of immigrants and people from Asia and India and, you know, Africa and East Asia that are now and Latin America that are now in the country, you have to take these things into consideration when you talk about these points. Someone who's half white, who was born here, they identify more, rightly or wrongly, with this country than the non-white half of their family.
Let's be real, Kim. Like, if we were going to send people back, you wouldn't be one of the people that would go back. Realistically, we'd like to bump the demographics back up to, you know, at least 70%.
But they were when her mother came here.
Yes. Like, so exactly. So it's like, Kim, we simply want the demographics to, you know, be what it was when your parents came here. This amazing country that your parents were welcome into. It was you, if your mom went into the Philly hood and went into a 99% black area, I don't think they would have been welcomed very nicely. No. I don't think so. So, and you know that. There's a reason you like Idaho. You want to live around white people too. And a lot of people were saying in the comments, like, non-whites can want to live around white people, but other white people aren't allowed to live among other white people. So it's like, to compare us just wanting to preserve the demographics of our country from what, like, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, to just go back to that with, like, cutting off kids' dicks. I mean, that is very disingenuous. That is ridiculous.
Well, that point is, I mean, the actual thing of comparing it to the trans movement is over the top and ridiculous, but you got to look at what she's saying. She's saying that, you know, that's a position that's radical on the left, that spread and became mainstream on the left. And she's saying this is a position that's radical on the right, that spread and became mainstream on the right. I mean, she's not actually comparing it.
Well, I hope,
you know,
not
the same. Yeah, I hope not too. But the point is, though, again, I can't emphasize this enough. What Rebecca said in her tweet is basically the same thing that Kim just said about the experience her mother had and her family had when they came to Idaho.
That's
true. They came to Idaho and they found a big, white, friendly state, and they found it very agreeable.
And it was very safe, unlike Vietnam.
Right. And so the other thing is, you wouldn't have liked moving to Idaho back when it was the indigenous people here who probably would have skinned you and eaten you. I mean, it's not, I'm not exaggerating. I mean, like, the Idaho was colonized. It used to be part of the Oregon Territory. It was colonized by white Europeans, and they created a certain culture and a place there. And the other thing that I think is very unfair when Kim starts talking specifically about Idaho is that there has been a history of white nationalists associated with Idaho going back decades and decades and decades.
Yes.
Butler had the Aryan Nations compound there. The Brüder Schwiegen were very – Bob Matthews was very active there.
Yeah.
But also, you know, Randy Weaver, the Ruby Ridge incident happened in Idaho.
It is a historically, you know, white nationalist state, and it is for a reason, because it's a very white state.
Yeah, I mean, this was like the last bastion, this idea, I mean, of the Northwest bastion for white America is something that people have been talking about since the 70s, at least. And there is still, and Rebecca knows a lot of these people, there is still a thriving community of white nationalists living in Idaho, who went there, much like West Virginia, to go to a white rural place and get away from the stuff that you talk about that you had to deal with when you were living in Philadelphia.
Yes, because I lived as a minority in Philadelphia in like 98% black neighborhoods for almost 10 years. And you can imagine, Kim, what that was like. You know, so basically it's like she can enjoy living around white people. She can enjoy living in a white state and the benefits of a safe white community. But we're not allowed to do that. We're not allowed to simply say that we enjoy living in a safe white community, or in Kim's word, we are Nazi bigots.
Right. And so the question is, so the first question is, where do we go if we want to just live around white people or mostly white people? Where do we get to go? And this is the problem. And this is what leads to white nationalism. So then she brings on this person,
Carlin
Borisenko, independent journalist who covers the far left and is an author of A Brief History of Racism. Who is this person, Emily?
I guess she used to be like a leftist or even a communist back in what I think like 2020. Forgive me, I don't know all the information if it's slightly wrong, but I guess then she became more anti-woke. And even started, you know, flirting kind of with the Groypers and, you know, kind of Groyper adjacent, though she's had a few falling outs with them and blocked and unblocked them.
But she's an anti-CRT.
Yeah, she's like anti-woke. I mean, honestly, I'll be honest. I think one of her big enemies is like James Lindsay, but she kind of sounds identical to James Lindsay in this interview.
The whole breakdown here is she's saying that CRT, if you actually listen to CRT, people who believe in that ideology, which is mostly dead now, is that it's anti-white. People believe it's anti-white. And she's saying if you listen to the people who propagate CRT, they're not actually anti-white.
Well, they're anti-capitalist.
They're anti-capitalist.
Oh, okay.
But the way this conversation goes, you guys will see, it gets kind of interesting.
Because they're against immigration and they're against critical race theory, they don't realize that they're like slowly taking the steps in thinking, especially I think we saw this with the H-1B visa conversation when that came out recently. And a lot of the Indian Americans who are Republican came out saying, oh, my God, I have never been more attacked suddenly by people that were on my own team.
But it actually has never been about physical skin color. In fact, we can look at someone like Cheryl Harris, who literally wrote the paper Whiteness is Property at Harvard Law School back in 1993. And I have her on video saying that this is not about white skin color. Black people can be white too. This is explicitly an anti-capitalist ideology. And I think, you know, this is a drum that I've been beating again for years and years and years to try to explain to people on the right who the enemy is that they're actually fighting. And in response, all I've gotten from them is they hate white people. They hate white people. They hate white people. They hate what they call systemic racism, which means the system that upholds racism, which means capitalism in their language. And so I think that the fact that conservative influencers have over and over and over again beaten this into their audience that they hate white people has left this sensibility of a lot of people on the right feeling as though they are a victim of this system. And so what do? They gravitate to the most extreme edges of the system, and they do so deliberately to say the words they're not supposed to say or to have the ideas they're not supposed to have.
And I don't think people realize how they're getting sucked into this as easily as they're getting sucked in. But I'm starting to see, you know, it was like incremental. I'm sure there were steps that happened prior to, first it starts with immigration, right? I think we saw that. Like, it was like, we have all these immigrants here. They don't belong here. And then it kind of turns into, they can't assimilate. You know, certain groups can't assimilate, so they've got to go. And a reasonable person says, yeah, okay, I don't want illegal immigration in the country. If we don't have sovereign borders, we're not a sovereign country. Like, I think, yes, we need to do something about our borders. I mean, this is ridiculous. I don't think I could just, I would love to live in Italy, for example, but I don't think I could just go and live in Italy illegally and then like they catch me and I still have a right to stick around. I would assume they're going to kick my ass out of there. And I'd be like, well, you know, that's what I got, you know? So I think reasonable people say, yeah, we got to do something about immigration. Reasonable people then say, and maybe there are some groups that it's difficult for them to assimilate because the left, for example, is not requiring them to assimilate. So if they're not demanding, you must assimilate into our culture, and they're able to create these kind of, you know, they're not assimilating in, then that's obviously a problem. I believe everybody can assimilate in. They just have to be, you have to make effort to assimilate them in. But that's a reasonable person. Then there's like this, then it gets into this, then the H-1B visa. And I see the next logical step. And then people say, well, these H-1B visas, because then we're bringing in all these Indians and it's cheap labor and it's done legally. But then the problem is once they're legal and they're here, then they start bringing in only their own, and then entire companies suddenly are all Indian, right? So then again, a reasonable person says, well, that's a problem. We don't want that either, right? But then the next step, and I'm starting to see this, and this is how it incrementally happens. Then the next step, a person says, okay, well, I want jobs for white people, okay? Because white people need jobs, and they're being taken by all these brown and Asian people, all right? And then I start to see, and I want white babies. I want marriages with whites and whites, and they need to have white babies because we're a dying, otherwise we're going to be replaced, you know, and that's where the white replacement theory kind of comes in. And then it's like, now I just want a white community. And I only want to live around whites because it's safer when I'm around whites. And you can't dispute that, because when you look at communities of color, they're just riddled with all this crime. And who commits all the crimes in the cities? It's black and brown people. So I'm seeing this kind of progression where a reasonable person kind of goes from one step to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And then suddenly they find themselves sitting there saying, yeah, I want to live in a 97% white community and everybody else has got to go. I mean, that's...
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a difficult situation because, I mean, obviously the left has made everything about race for years and years and years in regards to pushing on their systemic racism line, which has led people with a very distinct impression, again, that I would argue is false about what they believe. But I mean, it's also that you can't have reasonable discussions about these topics without getting attacked by someone. And so I do think the H-1B visa issue is interesting because, I mean, for me, I'm personally against all immigration. I think there should be an immigration moratorium. I think it should be completely closed off. It's not because I hate immigrants. It's not because I hate Indians. I'm literally married to a Ukrainian immigrant, so I certainly don't hate immigrants. But it's just because I think we're in a situation as a country where we just need to take a little bit of a pause and kind of look at the situation. Now, when I put that out online, I wasn't actually called a racist by the left. I was called a racist by the right. And so it's like, okay, so now we can't even have discussions about what makes sense for this country in terms of immigration policy without being called a racist by one side or another. I mean, I think we should live in a place where we should be able to have these conversations about race. And again, I'm not going to treat anyone differently because of their race. I don't have any sort of feelings about people who aren't as white as I am, even with the sun shining on me. But I mean, I think, you know, we look at things like, you know, the Haitian immigrant thing that happened several months ago, where, you know, we are bringing immigrants into this country who have on average about a 65 IQ. And I think that it's not a problem because of their skin color. It's a problem because of the reality of are these people capable of assimilating to this country?
So this whole conversation about Indians is really interesting because in the beginning of the video, she says we want a colorblind meritocracy. But then this woman, the anti-CRT person who talks about, first of all, how Haitians have, you know, low IQ.
She said we're importing Haitians that have 65 IQ, and Kim was kind of like,
well, I mean, what?
So it's like, what is it?
Do you think that white nationalists really, it is just skin color?
No, that's what I'm saying. They're using the classic leftist thing, like definition of race, that it's just skin color. No, obviously, it's about IQ. It's about violence predisposition. It's about all of the above.
It's about evolution.
That's what constitutes a race.
Yeah.
So it's like, she's saying it. It's like she's saying we don't want to import Haitians because they have 65 IQ, but it's racist. We don't want to discriminate them by race. It's like what the hell are you trying to say?
Yeah, well, the old thing of making it about skin color is so retarded. I mean, like white nationalists, it's just they want to see like light skin.
Well, in that case, Kim would be a white person.
Kim would be a white person. She has the same skin color as any white person. But yeah, no, the thing that's interesting about the Indian discussion though is,
yeah.
So the problem here is that they don't assimilate. I mean, the one good thing about Indian immigrants is that they have such a racial view that a lot of times they will forbid their sons and daughters from marrying white people because they're so racist against white people.
Right. Why not go after the Indians for being racist? I guess what that's what they're doing.
They are. No, they are doing.
They don't want any race.
But what I'm saying
racist.
Is that good for the Indians. I mean, the Indians know to keep themselves separate. And what's interesting also is Kim in her video about her background, and I'm sorry to get personal like this, but I mean, it's relevant. It's relevant. She was obviously triggered by what Rebecca said.
Yeah.
And this is very personal for her. And I have a great sympathy for that. But here's what she said specifically about what her Vietnamese community did and how they function.
There were a few other Vietnamese families that had also been settled in Boise. They stuck together and they formed strong bonds. They found jobs and eventually opened restaurants and nail salons. When I was growing up, my family often talked about going back to Vietnam when things got better. They yearned for home. You see, refugees have a different mentality than immigrants. Immigrants often come in search of opportunity and a better life, but refugees come in a moment of desperation and fear. Refugees think their situation is temporary, and as soon as their country gets through the rough patch, when the bad government is finally replaced or the war is over, they think they will go back and be reunited with loved ones in the place they call home. But reality eventually wins out. It takes decades for a war-torn nation to rebuild, and during those decades, life happens. Careers are built, homes are bought, marriages happen, and children are born. The American-born children don't want to go back to a home they've never known, and families don't want to be split up again. I remember feeling afraid as a kid hearing the conversations about going back to Vietnam. My other American-born cousins and I would worry that we would be uprooted from our home here in America and taken to live in a place we had never been.
They stick together.
As a group. They stuck together as a group. They built businesses. They worked together.
That's what all races do, and they're allowed to do in this country, except for white people.
Except white people. White people are not allowed to do this.
So they're trying to say, you know, ideally, just everyone stop working together as a race. Everybody stop being racist. Everybody, like, well, good luck with that, Kim. Well, I think white people are the only people that are able to be manipulated in that way to say, I refuse to, well, not only manipulated, but literally prevented by our government from organizing racially, hiring ourselves. You know, there's a default thing that we can't, you know, hire people based on race, but the Indians still do it. The Asians still do it. The Mexicans still do it. Everyone does it except for white. Blacks still do it. Black-owned businesses. So it's policy in this country that everyone can racially organize, hire each other, work together to further their own racial interests, except for white people. And then you get mad at us for saying, well, we simply want to do that too.
Yeah, there's two problems here. The first is this thing, this capitalist question. now, I assume this gal, Carlin, who really is, I mean, she's an idiot, but I, you know, her whole thrust of her thing is very anti-communism. So she says, yeah. CRT is not about anti-white. It's not targeting white people specifically. It's this communist, it's about opposing capitalism.
Oh, yeah,
really.
Sure. White people have ever been harmed from the CRT program.
Well, she's opposed to communism. Communism is the bad guy. So I guess capitalism is the good
she
guy.
She loves capitalism.
And Kim's own family they fled Saigon. So I suppose they were fleeing the Vietnamese communists. So I assume she's not a fan of communism. But the problem is, all this is done by capitalism. Capitalism is the thing that brought the blacks here in the first place from Africa, wanting to make slaves out of them so they didn't have to pay white workers free white labor.
Which we're against slavery. They shouldn't have been brought here.
They should never have been brought here. But capitalism, not white supremacy, not white nationalism especially, but capitalism, colorblind capitalism brought them here. The same is true of all the other – the reason why the blacks then were brought after the Civil War all into the northern cities was done by northern industrialists who wanted cheap labor. And
yep.
All the waves of Latin American and mestizo migration into this country have been brought here as cheap labor.
Scab labor.
And the H-1B visa people also are being brought here by
hyper-capitalism.
By capitalism.
By this hyper-capitalist regime that's going on with Trump. And that's why he's not actually deporting these people, and he doesn't want to.
So what is the problem with the H-1B Indians coming over if your goal is a colorblind meritocracy. I mean, if your goal is Usha Vance's or Vivek Ramaswamy's colorblind meritocracy, and the Indians outwork and outperform the white people or the other people, what's the problem with them coming in and rising right to the top? So really what you're saying is your problem is not that Indians are coming in as cheap labor, that Indians outperform people and take over whole industries like the tech jobs.
Well, they are saying that.
What you're saying the problem is that Indians stick together and work together. But Kim, how can you say that when you were just extolling the virtues of your Vietnamese family that came over and worked together as a group and stuck together as a group to advance themselves in this society? See, this is...
The fact is this argument works on no other race except for white people and maybe, you know, some Hapas. No other race is tricked into saying, all right, we're going to throw our own race under the bus and we're only going to hire people of other races because we want the colorblind meritocracy, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, what the hell are we as a country? I mean, are we a capitalist plantation that for the sake of big billionaires and oligarchs just trades out races, swaps them like interchangeable machine parts in a factory machine? To make profits for the shareholders? I mean, is that the vision? Because when you talk about a colorblind meritocracy, that's what you're talking about. That's the vision that you're talking about. So if you are not that, and you are a nation, then a nation of whom? By whom and for whom? A nation of people, right? Of a specific people.
Right. I mean, she says she's a nationalist. Here's my big
thing. She doesn't say she's a nationalist.
She's not for open borders. She's against immigration. So she must be a nationalist.
Well, she's talking specifically, if you listen to what she says and what all these people say is, okay, well, we have to have borders because if you just have unchecked, it's the standard. Listen, she's taking the standard Trumpist line that you don't have a sovereign country unless you have borders that you're enforcing.
Okay, but it's like, let's be real. Would she say this about Vietnam? Would she say Vietnam should not be a Vietnamese majority country? Would she say that? And this is where my tweet comes in. Like, imagine going to China or Japan or Vietnam and saying, you're not allowed to have a Vietnamese country. And if a bunch of white people are coming in and your demographics are shrinking, then you're an evil racist for being upset about that.
Well, look, here she says that she is against, anti-white racism. And this is the standard sort of like anti-woke position right now in the populist right. She's against anti-white racism, and she doesn't even have a problem with people being proud of being white.
I mean, I'm seeing so much chatter, not even from these particular accounts that are calling for white white neighborhoods, white nation, be proud of your whiteness, which I don't think there's any problem with being proud of your whiteness. I mean, I think that's I'm proud of being Asian. I'm proud of being Danish. I love being both Vietnamese and Danish. I love my heritage. In fact, I've only been back to Denmark. I've never been to Vietnam. So I don't have any problem with being proud of your heritage, but they're taking it to a different level.
The real problem here politically is that this, you know, you could say on a personal level, okay, a person of mixed background is going to get uncomfortable when people start talking about whites only because that excludes them. So on a personal level, that's, you know, it's cut and dry, very simple. All right. Fair enough. But the bigger issue here is about nationalism, group identity, group interests versus individualism and the individualist mindset. Nationalism is a force in the world that tends to form up when a people are under terrible pressure.
Right.
And Kim should look no further to see that than Vietnam and the Vietnamese people who wage one anti-colonial war, nationalist war after another in the 20th century. So many millions of people died so that they could have a free and independent country, a country of their own. That was a nationalist struggle. Now,
so was that wrong?
It was under the banner of communism. It was done under Ho Chi Minh was a communist and the Viet Cong were communists. But, you know, he says it in his own words, what they were fighting for and what the people who fought for it and died and sacrificed were fighting for was to have a Vietnamese country, a free and independent Vietnam that was their own Vietnamese national state. Now, if you look at what's happening in the West and in America with rising white nationalism, because we talked about there have been white nationalists for years. There have been white nationalist ideologies and speakers and writers and thinkers in Idaho, particularly. So why is this thing spreading?
Now they're saying it's growing. Oh, it's scary because it's growing. Why could that be?
It is growing.
How could that be? Yes,
but,
it is.
But this is the thing. And this is where the comparison to the trans ideology really falls flat. The trans stuff as a fringe leftist idea was aggressively pushed down from the Ivy Leagues, just like CRT, was pushed down from the Jewish-dominated Ivy Leagues, from the media, from Hollywood. It was a boutique ideology of the super rich and the powerful, and was pushed down all the way down the chain on the rest, the long-suffering majorities
like
who rejected it.
Yeah, forced through terror.
Yes.
And like brainwashing of vulnerable children.
Right. Now, what's happening with white nationalism, the process that Kim is describing, is exactly the opposite. It is a rising feeling. It is a slow sort of consciousness that's dawning on white people, not just in the United States, but all over the West. And so it's the complete opposite. It's a grassroots thing, organically swelling up from the base.
Yes. In fact, they're doing everything they can to prevent this from happening.
Just like this Wikipedia tag on Kim's video calling out the white, you know, debunking the white replacement theory.
Yes.
So the question is, why is this happening now? When these ideologies, white nationalism in one form or another, has been around for decades, well, it's obvious. And this is where you really get to the heart of the problem. Whites are in a state of steep decline in their own countries.
Yeah.
The country that Kim's Vietnamese mom and her family came to no longer exists. It is being crushed.
That's right.
And the important thing is, this has been happening as a matter of policy, as you just said.
Policy.
For decades and decades and decades, actually really starting with the Civil War, when the federal government imposed a kind of anti-white terror on the South.
Yes, but really ramped up during the Civil Rights Act, which prevents specifically whites from living in their own neighborhoods.
Civil rights era, yeah.
From, going to their own schools, from hiring each other, from freedom of association. And they were forced with bayonets out of their neighborhoods and forced to integrate with blacks. Now look at our cities. Whites have been ethnically cleansed from our cities. This is a fact. If you look at any city, the white population has been in a steep, steep decline. And look at the state of the cities. Kim, it's not just people making stuff up when they say that black and brown people are committing the crime. They are objectively committing the crime. Not Asians. Asians are the one group that probably commits less crime than white people. But black and brown people who have taken over the cities because white people don't want to live in violent neighborhoods. Oh, but that's a wrong thing. We aren't allowed to. We aren't allowed to want to live in a safe white neighborhood, are we, Kim?
Well, this is the central problem, is that you have to acknowledge that this woke stuff is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, CRT, it just came about in the last few years. Like, the actual program of anti-white violence against white people has been going on for decades and decades and decades. We were just reading about South Boston. You know, it was St. Paddy's Day. South Boston was one of the most Irish Catholic ethnic neighborhoods in the country.
And it was a thriving community.
Thriving community.
But they were big families and they were happy.
Great identity. They had a great patriotism. A lot of the Irish from South Boston served in all of America's wars. And the federal government went to war on South Boston in the 1970s to forcibly integrate with school busing, to bus the white kids out of their own neighborhood, bus them to majority black schools, to bus the black kids into Southie, and to break it up.
Yeah, if white people complained, they got beaten by the cops. So it was a literal government-enforced violent expulsion, enforced violently not only by our own government, but by the blacks that moved in. And yes, blacks are disproportionately violent. If you can mention 65 IQ Haitians on your show, Kim, you can acknowledge the predisposition to violence that black people have. This is a fact.
But that's the thing, is that, you know, this was a strong white ethnic community, and there were dozens and dozens and dozens of examples of this all over American cities during that period.
It's every city.
You know,
it's
I looked it up. South Boston is now down to 24% Irish.
Oh, my God.
And the black, I think the black and brown proportion of the city, of South Boston specifically, of that neighborhood of Southie, the African-American or Hispanic proportion of that neighborhood has increased by more than 400% since 1990. That would not have happened had the government not gone in to do this. And this is what happened. I mean, look at Detroit is another one. Detroit is the classic example. You know, this Carlin woman was at AFPAC, which was held in Detroit. Look at the chart of what happened to Detroit. Again, this didn't happen naturally through natural products of migration. These people, the white people that left Detroit, were refugees. They were refugees like Kim's people who fled after the fall of Saigon.
Yes.
What happened during the civil rights era and the Fair Housing Act and the forced busing was by force the destruction and the breakup of white communities all over the United States.
Erasing them completely from existence. And to this day, we are seen as the perpetrators and not the victims of this racial expulsion.
And now we have a situation where whites used to be, as recently as like 1980, the vast majority of this country, and now are down to like less than 60%. It's in the 50s.
It's in the 50s now. And here's a chart that just came out where you can see the white birth rates. We're seeing 40%, 30%, 22%. I mean, the younger generations of whites are already a minority in this country. And this is the question I have. At what point are white people allowed to be upset about this? At what point are our numbers going to shrink to the point where you're going to say, okay, you guys are allowed to be upset about this. You're not evil for being upset about this. What, like 10%? Or when we get to what, like 10% of this country? Because if the trends keep going, that's where we're going, Kim. We're going to 20%. We're going to go to 15% at this rate.
Yeah. So if white...
At what point are we allowed to be upset about this and not be demonized and called evil racists for not wanting to be, you know, forced into minority status?
So if whites are having a rising nationalist consciousness, it's because of this decades of this persecution, decades of a government wanting to break them down, break their communities up, and using state policy and terror and the FBI, you know, COINTELPRO to disrupt anyone.
And then like us talking about it.
And then we get censored off YouTube. We can't talk about this. Yeah. So
we get doxxed. We get fired. We've been through it all. We've been through the ringer. And they make it impossible for whites to organize in this country. They do everything they can. The federal government to stop that from happening.
The media. And again, now here's where it really gets. This is where it's really going to blow your mind. Is the reason this is happening is the same reason the genocide in Gaza is happening, because organized finance Jewry is running our media and has vast disproportionate control over our government. And this is where Kim's point about Israel controlling the United States foreign policy.
She knows.
Organized Jewry controls America's domestic policy as well. And it is the power of these people in the media, in the government, in the legal system. I mean, just look at the Jewish percentage of the staff of Harvard Law, for instance. They're 2% of the population. They hate white people. They have a thing against the white race.
And this is, you can look at the books. I mean, this is documented. The white speech, of course, Kim, you know about there's so much anti-white speech in the universities. Now only the anti-Semitic speech is going to get punished for, and the funds are going to get cut off because of the anti-Semitic speech.
Right. So if you know, decades and decades and decades of imperialism and colonialism and invasions and oppression and expulsion and all this is what crystallized a Vietnamese nationalism and a popular resistance that grew in Vietnam that led them to wage these wars one after another. I mean, I'm sure, you know, nobody wants that. I don't want white America to go through what the Vietnamese people had to go through to gain an independent nation. And I think that's why Kim, when she hears talk like this, she gets very nervous, because what this type of thinking could lead to is white America becoming activated and politically or otherwise fighting some sort of national struggle for their own independence, either to make America an all-white nation or a mostly white nation, as it was for all of its history.
I'll take 80%. I'll take 75%.
Or to have a some sort of breakaway nation where white people can live, which is what specifically Idaho was the center of that idea for many decades. But the idea is, though, that what's happening to us is real. What's happening to white people is real.
It's real.
And that's why this sentiment is exploding. And that's why it's growing. And that's why you're seeing it's not top down. It's not being forced on anybody. People are coming to these conclusions on their own.
Yeah.
When they see what's happening to their country and their people and their race.
And it's like we're at the point now that we can't escape this violence. We can't go move to an all white neighborhood or an all white state because They're not going to be majority white anymore. There are going to be no places that are majority white left in this country. And I don't think Kim Iverson wants that either. I don't think Kim Iverson wants... I think she likes living around white people. I think she likes living in a white, safe state.
Well, you gotta choose.
I don't think she wants to live in Nigeria. Kim doesn't want to live in Nigeria. Kim doesn't want to live in Pakistan. She doesn't want to live in Haiti or Somalia. She wants to live in white America. That's what she loves. That's why she loves Idaho. You know, and this is why it's especially frustrating with Kim Iverson, because she's so good on Palestine. She's so good at calling out Jews for, you know, oppressing and, you know, genociding a people, occupying a nation of a people, destroying a people in every way. And she wants Palestinian nationalism. She thinks that Palestine should be free, that they should have their own racial, ethnic
free of
nation,
Jews, specifically
free of
Jews. Jewish power.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And she'll say that. And yeah, that's great. But then the fact that she says that when white people want the same thing, because we are in an extremely similar situation, we may not have the bombs coming down on us yet, but we have been violently occupied and put down in our own nation.
And the history of that is something that you have to, you know, it's been suppressed, but it's there for everybody to see.
Yeah, yeah. But the fact that you can support one people's struggle for nationalism and support them at all costs, but then condemn another people's quest for nationalism and call them evil bigots and all this, you know, this language and say that we're not allowed to have that. I mean, that's especially frustrating. And it makes me wonder, like, you know, maybe you're the racist, Kim. Maybe Kim's the racist.
Well, I mean, you know, she's not going to be racist against half of her family and the people of, you know, Idaho. She loves white people. She's married to a white person.
She loves
she's
white
not
people.
Racist against white people. But the other thing is, I don't think it's bigotry, the fact that Kim Iverson has as many white nationalist viewers. Why don't people just shut her off the second they see that she's half Vietnamese? I mean,
right,
no one,
exactly.
People watch her because she makes good content. She makes good points.
Yeah,
she articulates her points well. But the other thing is, we live in a world of nations, and this is the problem. I mean, you don't hate bigotry. You don't hate white nationalists. You hate nature. You hate reality. We live in a world of nations and of national groups. Now, it is possible when she talks about assimilation. It's possible for people of a mixed race background, two totally different continents, totally different histories, tens of thousands of hundreds of thousands of years of evolution and climate that led to these two totally different human families. And two people can come together and they have a child, and that child is 50% one, 50% the other. But the nature of human groups is that it doesn't stay that way. That any biracial person like Kim Iverson, mm-hmm, and Barack Obama is a good example. I mean, he's not a good person, but he's a good example of someone who was born biracial, white mother, black father, and he chose which half to identify with, very consciously, I might add, and he chose to marry a black woman and embrace black identity and have black children and raise them with that identity. In Kim's case, it seems like she has gone with the white identity. As I said, she's never even been to Vietnam. But that's what happens when you're dealing with large groups of people. And what we have in America is a situation where there are these groups that do stick together. It wasn't a problem when America was 90% white. If the local little Vietnamese immigrant community stick together and they have their nail salons or their restaurants,
why not?
It wasn't a problem. It's not a problem in any case when black people would stick together with certain things. I don't think, again, I think that people not assimilating or people sticking together with their own, running with their own,
That's a fine thing. That's a natural thing.
That's natural. And you're misdiagnosing the problem if you think that's what the problem is. Now, in the case of Jews, they stick together like nobody else on earth.
Yeah.
And they use that power to rule over everybody else. But it's white people specifically that are expected to hold, as you say, to this expectation that we are just all individuals and it's a colorblind meritocracy, even as non-white groups encroach on more and more and more and more of our territory, and we shrink and we shrink and we shrink. And the more they increase in numbers, the more it becomes a necessity for us to get anywhere, to survive.
That's what I'm saying.
To stick together.
It's like, at what point, when we are a minority status, which if we don't do something drastic, if we don't have a white nationalism and we don't get our demographics up in some drastic way, like mass deportations, we will become a minority. That is inevitable. So it's like, at what percentage are we going to be allowed to say, okay, we need to work together racially to, you know, do what every other race does and advocate for our own race.
Yeah, Kim went after Rebecca for coming to Idaho from St. Louis. Well, what happened to St. Louis?
Oh my God.
What is the history of, you know, St. Louis has a big statue to St. Louis, the Crusader King, the French Crusader King, who, by the way, was no fan of the Jews and fought against Jewish power and influence in his time. And that's a noble, wonderful thing. And the Jewish community in St. Louis was trying to get that statue taken down. But St. Louis, my dad lived there for a while. It is one of the most violent black communities in the country. And St. Louis as a city did not used to be so black. It was destroyed by government policy as a city. And that's why Rebecca and people like her would want to go to a state like Idaho for the same, you know, reason that, like I say, Kim's people fled to Idaho.
Yes,
exactly. To be around
it's
a lot of safe white people.
Why villainize her for not wanting her kids to get shot in the street while they're playing in their yard?
Yeah.
You know, your kids are freaking in danger.
So the thing is this, what I would like to end this with is just to say that this Carlin woman and Kim Iverson talk a lot about having conversations. Yeah. And we need to have open, honest conversations.
Well, agreed.
That's what I'm saying is Kim Iverson and people like her are open-minded and smart enough and independent enough, because she's gotten a lot of heat from the Jews. You know, I want to point out to anybody that would just watch this and say, oh, Kim Iverson's anti-white Asian, like, just write her off. She has gotten so much heat from these Jews for speaking out on Israel, and they constantly attack her. If you search her Twitter, I mean, they really come after her. And I want to play real quick a short clip of her when she debated Destiny, where Destiny was trying to pin her down on saying, shouldn't we have gone to war against Hitler in World War II? And she was not buying it.
Other general.
Well, wait. Do we not feel like Putin? Wait, so is Putin not a dictator?
I don't know if he's a dictator. I'm not Russian. I don't really care. It's not my country. I don't deal with it.
Do we not care then? Because the United States has to oppose.
Don't have to oppose. We don't have to get involved with other countries and other elections.
Do you think that in World War II, do you think the United States should have stepped up to fight against Germany?
I think that the United States.
That's such an easy yes or no question. Should we have stepped up to fight against? It's such an easy yes or no question. Should the United States have stepped up to fight against Germany?
It's not an easy yes or no question. The United States decided it was in the United States' interest after the bombing of Pearl Harbor to go into that war. Prior to that point, the United States did not. Had there not been the bombing of Pearl Harbor, I don't know.
So we don't even know if we should have opposed the Nazis.
Well, hey, she's like, you know, 70% of the way there. And, you know, when I was having this discussion, an actual a half Asian, half white girl came into my replies and she said, I agree with you, Emily. I agree that, you know, this country should remain majority white. I like living around white people. I like living in a majority white country, and I want your country to remain majority white. And I stand with you guys. And it's like, and I was like, thank you. And it's like, that's all you need to say, Kim. It's like,
yeah, don't
it's
come
like,
at us.
That's all you got to say.
Don't come at us with the, oh, you're a bigot. You're this and this and that. And so, I mean,
it's not like we are white nationalists. Me and you, we are certified white nationalists. And it's not, it doesn't have to be this cartoonish thing. We, you know, we don't give in to leftist caricatures of what white nationalism is. You know, it's simply we just want what every other race has. We want the ability to advocate for ourselves, to have our own communities, and to be the majority in our historically white countries. You're not going to have any risk of getting kicked out, Kim. It's like we just want to return to like even 90s demographics, 80s, 90s. I'll take it. I mean, if it's between 22% and going back to the 90s, give me the freaking 90s. So that doesn't mean every non-white's going to get kicked out. It means a hell of a lot of them are. But these are the people that Carlin and Kim are rallying against in this video. The people that aren't assimilating, the people that don't speak English, the people that are incredibly clannish. You know, if we just remove people from the last, say, 30 years of mass immigration, we could get back to demographics. There would be historic minority communities. And, you know, that would be all we got to do.
White people need to have a place where they can be around their own, somewhere in the world. I mean, that's the other thing. We're not allowed this anywhere in Europe. No country in Europe is allowed to have this position.
It's happening everywhere. Australia.
And the pressure. Again, if you understand Jewish power, then it's not hard for you to see what Jewish power is doing in this country to white people. And that's why white nationalism, you more often than not, true white nationalism dovetails with political anti-Semitism, opposition to Jewish power. But the bottom line is, yes, dialogue is good. I'm glad that she was not taking a knee-jerk response, at least in her video, even though her tweets were knee-jerk.
Yeah.
Her video, she's being careful to not say it's white supremacists because it's not white supremacists. And it's good that she is willing to tackle the subject because a lot of people wouldn't. And I don't think our response should be just a knee-jerk, oh, go home to Vietnam. But the thing is, if you want to have that conversation, then have the conversation. Bring Rebecca on your show.
She's a
very intelligent person, and she could discuss this with you in a fair way without calling you names or without you calling her names.
And she literally just had an Asian on her podcast the other week. Like, she talks to other races. You could be a white nationalist and interact politely with other races.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't talk about this, you're right that this is growing. You're right that this white nationalism is growing all over the right, and you're also correct that there is a progression from the one point to another that leads to this. I think that's good. I think it's inevitable that it's going to lead to this.
It's going to continue to grow as long as we continue to dwindle in numbers.
So why not, yes, have an intelligent discussion with it, and let's just stop with the name calling.